You know, in Zen, they say enlightenment consists of recognizing everything as nothing special. I got a nice exegesis on that last weekend from Al Wang, the Tai Chi master. He said, nothing special, just another lousy sunrise. And if you can look at the whole world that way, nothing special, just another lousy sunrise, just more rain, just more food, you got to put your clothes on, you got to drive your car, nothing special. Then you've achieved Buddhist enlightenment, nothing special, just another lousy sunrise. I test myself by listening to Rush Limbaugh. If Rush Limbaugh seems like nothing special, I feel I'm getting close to Buddhahood. Unfortunately, Rush Limbaugh very seldom seems like nothing special. He seems like something obnoxious. And so I know I haven't achieved Buddhahood yet, so I listen to him more often to try to develop the ideal Buddhist detachment. It's sort of like hitting yourself with a knobby stick until you don't feel anything. Then you know you've achieved detachment. And lately, his major passion is Hillary Rodham Clinton, who has a wonderful name, by the way. Before Bill ran for president, she was Hillary Rodham, which is a name that sounds like a railroad train going away. Hillary Rodham, Hillary Rodham, Hillary Rodham. And then when he ran for president, because she was suspected of being a liberated woman, God forbid, she changed it to Hillary Clinton, which sounds like a train coming closer. Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton. Now that he's elected, she's become Hillary Rodham Clinton, which sounds like a train crossing a shaky bridge. Hillary Rodham Clinton, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Hillary Rodham Clinton. But be that as it may, she's a very cute lady and very bright, and I like her a lot. And I'm fascinated by the way Rush Limbaugh rages and rants against her. And I finally realized it's not hatred. It's frustrated love. This man is in love with her, but he doesn't know how to express love. It's the most tragic love affair since King Kong and Fay Wray, and you can see the physical resemblance between both of them. Rush has a lot in common with King Kong, and Hillary has a lot in common with Fay Wray. And the tragedy of King Kong is that he could never express his love. He tried to, but he didn't know how. When you first see the film, you think he's attacking Fay Wray. Then when you see it over a few hundred times, like most of us have, you realize Kong is always trying to express love, but he doesn't know how. That's because he's lived his whole life behind a wall with a bunch of dinosaurs. And it's the same with Rush Limbaugh. He grew up among Republicans, which is like living your whole life behind a wall with a bunch of dinosaurs. So when he tries to express love, it comes out sounding like a little boy's spite. It sounds like hatred, but it's really frustrated love. And who can blame him? I mean, don't we all have a yen for Hillary? Anyway, one of these days they're going to walk into the studio and find him there dead with French fries and Big Macs and malted chocolate malted all over the place. That's because he dislikes the AMA. He believes all their health rules are more liberal propaganda. Anything that interferes with his appetites or prejudices are liberal propaganda and oppose family values. You know what family values means. That's hating the same people your grandfather hated. Anyway, they're going to find him there with all this junk food dead, and somebody from the AMA is going to walk in and say, well, the junk food finally killed him. And then Robert Armstrong will walk in and say, no, it wasn't the junk food. It was beauty that killed the beast. That's one of my alternative endings for King Kong. Remake it with Rush Limbaugh and Hillary Clinton. Another alternative ending I have in mind is we do it uncensored this time, and you can see King Kong's dong, which you never saw in the original. Most people have never thought much about how big King Kong's dong was, even although it's in the back of all of our minds. If you stop to think about this, lots of jokes about it. We're just afraid to talk about it in public. We joke about it in private. It's the great allegory of the 20th century, and of course, the what's right out in the open, the most obvious thing, how could they do it, is the one thing we never talk about publicly. Could they do it at all? There's a little hint of that in that question in the remake made by Dino De Laurentiis, where Jessica Lange says, be reasonable, Kong, it can't work between the two of us. But A French critic named Raymond Bernard wrote an essay based on comparative anatomy and mythology and concluded that by comparative anatomy, King Kong should have 30 inches. But given his size compared to the size of an ordinary gorilla. But he rejects that after demonstrating it on the grounds that Kong is not a creature in zoology, but mythology. He's an ithyphallic divinity in the family of Pan, Dionysus, Osiris. All those old Mediterranean gods had a gigantic wangs, which are seldom shown in popular books on the ancient world. You got to get into really scholarly works to find out. They were all shown with dicks three times the average size. The ancient Mediterranean belief seems to have been the greater the mass of the willy, the greater the divinity indwelling. And so King Kong, Bernard figures, must have had three times as much as we'd expect, which gives him around 6 feet. And so you can understand the panic in New York when King Kong is on the loose. A gigantic gorilla in heat is terrifying enough, but a gigantic gorilla in heat with a six-foot wang is absolutely terrifying. No wonder everybody's screaming and running around. But this ancient Mediterranean belief about divinity indwelling in the willy, and the bigger the willy, the more divinity, has made me wonder who had the bigger dick, King Kong or God? I decided King Kong because if you read Genesis, God walks around the Garden of Eden without knocking over any of the trees. King Kong couldn't walk through there without banging over half the things he ran into. He was so enormous. I figure God is about 18 feet compared to King Kong's 60 feet. But getting back to ithyphallic divinities, as they're called in the anthropology books, this, I think, underlies the Roman Catholic doctrine that a woman can't be a priest. Protestants have women ministers in most of the Protestant churches now. There are women rabbis. There have been a couple of women Zen masters. All the other religions have moved with the times. But the Pope keeps insisting there can be no women priests, because the priest represents Christ. And the most important thing about Christ was that he had a willy. Most people think the most important thing about Christ is that he represents love, forgiveness, endless compassion, noble ideas. But the secret teaching within the Vatican seems to be that the most important thing about Christ was that he had a willy. And an absolutely enormous one it must have been for him to be the chief of all the gods. And that's probably why the election of the Pope is surrounded with such secrecy. Every time a Pope dies and they have to elect a new Pope, they go into this solemn conclave. All the doors are locked. Nobody knows what goes on in there. It's all a big secret until some smoke comes out, which is the signal that they've made a choice. I think the way they do it is sort of like they cast the lead in a porno film. Everybody lays it on the table, and the pilgrim with the biggest musket wins. Because that goes back to this idea of the sanctity of the willy, which is so central to pagan, Mediterranean, and Catholic thinking.